Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Sweet 16 starts in a little more than 4 hours. Tonight, the first game to tip off will be two teams that Boise State has actually seen. Taco Bell fans have actually seen. Loyola in November and Nevada came in here in February. And if you just saw those two games, you would think that Nevada would win that game easily based on a win by Nevada here and a 34-point loss for Loyola. But as we come to this round, as the Sweet 16 starts today, Chris, it is one that is about as diversified as I can remember in recent years. There's some ones and twos that have made it, and then there are some 10-plus seeds that have made it also to this round.
Yeah, it's the ultimate bracket of, do you think it's better for favorites, or do you think it's better that underdogs win? And it's almost an age-old debate for the NCAA tournament. What is better, for there to be a bunch of upsets early, or for the favorites to survive on through and to have better matchups? And I've always been on the side of, I think favorites, all things being equal, favorites are what you should push for, because that creates the interest throughout the entire tournament. For number one, it saves the bracket. And for a whole sport to be decided on a gambling bracket, or to be, interest determined on a gambling bracket is interesting, but that's kind of what it is. That bracket is like the sanctity, and the longer you have your bracket alive, the more interested casual fans, the random non-college basketball fan from the office, are more likely to be engaged in the tournament the longer that they have a stake in their bracket. And they typically, you would take more favorites than not. So if you're not a bunch of upsets, there's more of a chance that your bracket is still alive come the Sweet 16. You get more titanic matchups for those name brands. You can get more Dukes and Kansases and Kentuckys and UCLAs and all that, typically, if the favorites are able to survive until the second week of the NCAA tournament. And that's usually what attracts just not only common sports fans, but also the diehard college basketball fans. Those are the kind of matchups that you live for. You get high-quality basketball the longer that the top one and two seeds survive, because they have the best players, and if they play the best game, then you're just getting a superior product. And for the basketball connoisseur, you would like to see high-quality hoops. And then the NBA draft prospects. We had a lot of them get cut out with this. DeAndre Ayton, no longer in this. And he was one of the guys that people were watching to see. Michigan State has Jaren Jackson, who a lot of people wanted to see survive a little bit longer than just one game. Miles Bridges, another player who's now out. So if you were in it from the NBA point of view, that's the other reason why you would want favorites versus underdogs. But I'm looking at this and I'm saying, do we really get a bunch of upsets? Like, do we really have, like, what if you were to listen to the national consumption of what this tournament is, it would be like there was a bunch of upsets in the first and second round, and the bracket's completely out of control, and how in the world can you even fathom that these teams are in it? I want to read you these teams. You tell me if there's a bunch of Cinderellas involved. Kansas State and Kentucky. Florida State, Gonzaga. Michigan, Texas A&M, Villanova, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Purdue, Kansas, Clemson, Syracuse, Duke. They don't sound like many of the, Wichita States of the world. There's not many Creightons. If you want to say these are lower seeds, yeah, I can understand that. Of course, I left out a couple that would make the point. Like, Nevada and Loyola Chicago are, I think, the only two that you could even consider Cinderella-type programs that are still in this. Gonzaga is a power program at this point. Gonzaga is not in the same class as all these other mid-majors. They are a power program. Looks like Boise State is a power program when it comes to football. There's only two halfway Cinderellas that remain in a bracket, and they play each other.
Which is either good or bad. One of them's going to get to the Elite Eight. The other thing, though, I'm going to say about the brackets, I think in the past, it was much more important to have the better seeds make it longer. And I think the reason is now, because of all the one-and-dones and all the, it seems like people are leaving early, I don't think people know the names of the players on the top teams as well as they used to. Because the Duke team back in the 90s, you'd have the same team line up for basically 3 years, and the same guys would play. So I think if you said, name me Duke starting five, name me Villanova starting five, I don't think people can do it as well as they used to be able to do it.
Yeah, it's fair. Very fair point. So you don't have the name value of the players driving it, but you still have programs that are well-known. And I don't think this is lacking for well-known programs. Now, maybe some of them are more known for football. Mm-hmm. Like Clemson. You think Clemson's in the last remaining 16? Yeah, that's expected. Deshaun Watson's a really good quarterback. Deshaun Watson was out here leading Clemson. So this is basketball. It's a little bit different. And maybe you could say the same thing for the Texas schools, where their emphasis is usually on football, and now their basketball squads are out here making a run to the Sweet 16. But, this is almost maybe the danger zone of the NCAA tournament, because either you want the titanic matchups of the best teams, the ones and two seeds, and again, for the first time, since 2000, you have half the ones and two seeds not even make it to the Sweet 16. So you don't have that. But you also don't really have a lot of Cinderellas either. Like, they're replaced by other power conference teams that were just not as good as some of the power conference teams that got eliminated.
But Kansas State hasn't been good for a while.
Yeah, but
Texas A&M has probably
State.
Never been good. So you're looking at a couple of teams there that are surprises. Purdue has been pretty good historically. West Virginia has been really good historically. I'll put Texas Tech in the category. What's Texas Tech been ever very good?
So you've got Knight three was supposed to make them pretty
good.
They
weren't that good when Bob Knight was there. So you've got three. And I'll put Florida State in the category. They've had a couple of good teams, but I think you're looking at a group of three or four that are big name universities, maybe better at the football, but I would put them in as a different category. Yeah. I wouldn't put Texas A&M and Texas Tech on the same footing as, you know, Duke and Villanova and
That's why I said it's the awkward in between. It's the awkward middle child, in a way, right? Like, it's not the Loyola Chicago and Nevadas, or if you wanted to, like, Buffalo could have made it through, or the Stephen F. Austins, or St. Bonaventure. I thought Bonaventure could have made a run. That would have been fun. Like, the mid-major conference. You can't sell me Texas A&M as an underdog. Like, as a general underdog that the nation could get behind. Florida State? Like,
But they haven't been very good. It'd be like if Syracuse made the playoffs in football. It's a named school, but they really haven't been that good in football.
Yeah, but I wouldn't expect the nation to get behind Syracuse as some kind of underdog story.
No,
like
you're
this
right.
is not going
to
happen.
Underdog story is Central Florida.
Yeah,
Boise State to a certain extent. They're sort of in the boat with Gonzaga. They've been there a lot, and maybe it's because we're out here. We expect it. Mm. So I think that the underdog is going to be played out with whoever wins the Loyola-Nevada game if Kentucky wins. Mm-hmm. I think if Kansas State wins, I don't think it's going to be as big a deal. I think that's going to be the yawn Final Four game if Kansas State somehow beats Kentucky. But I think the most intriguing game on Saturday of the two is going to be if Kentucky wins, Kentucky against somebody trying to get to a Final Four that you never would have thought would get to a Final Four.
Yeah, that'll be good. That's your ultimate Cinderella, and you're getting it. And that's almost why the tournament can't lose in a way, right? Mm-hmm. Because if upsets happen, it's great. If upsets don't happen, then it's great. So they found the right way to be right no matter what.
But don't you think, though, that maybe a Texas A&M or a Texas Tech, one of those middle teams you talk about, sort of the middle child, that's probably the worst-case scenario if those teams make the Final Four?
Exactly, because you don't have the compelling reason. I'm looking at the other side of the bracket. You brought up the left side.
The right side's pretty chalky.
Yeah, that's not as, like, you know,
and Syracuse is an 11. If somebody said, what do you think of Syracuse, you'd think they're a top seed most years.
Because if Kansas wins, but Clemson's one of those awkward middle childs that, like, if they win, that's probably not good. So, but if Kansas wins, it'll either be Kansas and Duke, which is what you want, the blue bloods. Absolutely.
That's about as blue blood as you can get.
Right? A lot of blue on
and
the court.
And then Villanova and who's on the other side?
It's Texas Tech or Purdue, which, again, isn't really – they're awkward middle children in a way, but Purdue's a two seed. So if you wanted to root for favorite, and Texas A&M's a three. No matter what happens.
Has Purdue been this good since they had Joe Barry Carroll? Were they that good when they had Glenn Robinson?
They still have – Robbie Hummel's teams were pretty good when they had him out here. And now that he always got hurt before they ever had a chance to make runs in the tournament. But I always thought the Robbie Hummel teams Swanigan was a pretty good player, too, for Purdue. So they've had some good guys out here repping Purdue, and they've had chances to make runs in the tournament. This might be the one time where they can get deep enough to get that national attention. And then on the other side, it could be Kansas and Syracuse, too. And that's a rematch of a championship game. So in a way, the tournament wins again, unless you have somebody like Clemson break up the party. And
What would be the ugliest Final Four you think we could get?
Clemson?
Texas A&M?
Texas A&M.
Texas Tech?
Texas Tech and Kansas State.
Yeah.
That's a really Big 12 heavy Final Four.
Well, the Big East had the Final Four, three teams 1 year. I think any time, you know, you talk about Super Bowl or World Series when you have two teams from the same region, I think if you have too many teams in the same region, the Final Four gets hurt.
Says Mr. I love the Alabama-Georgia championship game.
But I also
two teams from the same region in a championship game might not be the best thing in the world, says the guy who loved the Alabama-Georgia championship, you know, until it was played. And then
I liked it. I hated it. I liked it. I hated it. Then I liked it when I thought they were going to win, and then I hated it when the last touchdown went in. But no, but I think I had a vested interest. Just like out here, if Nevada gets into the Final Four, don't you think that the Mountain West area is going to be much more intrigued about the Final Four than they would if Loyola got in?
Yeah, it'd be intriguing. And if Nevada being the rival school, too. I mean, there's something to be said for you don't want to see Nevada in the Final Four because you hate them, or the Mountain West gets a Final Four berth, and that's great. So, yeah, they're in, just like Syracuse for me. I know a lot of people don't like them, and they're an 11 seed, but I had a rooting interest there. So if you if you're a fan of one of these 16 teams remaining, this is the best thing in the world. You can convince yourself that your team can make the Final Four.
1 week from today, one of my favorite days of the year, opening day for Major League Baseball. March 29th, which is a week from today, is also opening day for 4K a day. Your chance to win $1,000 four times per day on Sports Radio The Ticket. We've talked quite a bit about Loyola and Nevada. Who would know better how these teams match up with one another than one of Boise State's coaches? Mike Burns, who had to plan for both of them, joins us next. When we come back, we'll ask him to match up the Wolfpack and the Ramblers, give you a better idea of what's going to happen tonight in that game when we return to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Tonight, you can hear college basketball right here on Sports Radio The Ticket, following Caves and Prater at 6 o'clock. 5 o'clock, if you want to get the start of the Nevada-Loyola game, you can switch over to AM 1350. We'll have that game from start to finish. Boise State beat Loyola by 34 the last week in November, lost two heartbreakers to Nevada, one in January down there, one in February here. So we thought, who better than to help us break down that matchup tonight between Nevada and Loyola Chicago than one of the Bronco coaches, and Mike Burns, assistant coach, is kind enough to join us, Mike. So we'll start with the team probably that the fans are least familiar with. Loyola seems like such a long time ago. We faced him at the end of November. What kind of challenges will Loyola present for Nevada? Tell us sort of about the Ramblers.
Well, I think, you know, if people had an opportunity to see him play this past weekend, you know, especially that specifically the Tennessee game, the one thing that they do really well is they move the basketball well, and they're very good at making the extra pass, kind of spreading you out and creating open shots for each other. They play inside-out basketball. The big freshman inside does a great job of posting and stealing, and they look to get him the ball in there. So, you know, they're well-coached. They execute, and then they go to the defensive end of the floor, and they're just a really scrappy group that plays great position defense.
Now, when they were here, they didn't do a whole lot. Boise State won the game by 34. So when they left, I never considered that they would be a team to be in this position. So what did we do that night that allowed them not to do a whole lot against Boise State in a game that Chandler Hutchison didn't play a whole lot?
Well, you know, Coach Rice did a great job of kind of having our team on edge, because I think when they came to play us, they were unbeaten.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very aware of how good they were. They were you know, preseason pick to be in the top two or three in the Missouri Valley, and obviously they exceeded those expectations. But we knew they were a really good team, and we were really ready to play that night. You know, that combined with the little Taco Bell magic and the ball bouncing the wrong way for them on a few occasions, you know, the game kind of got away from them. And that was the worst loss they took all year. But that was also a game where the matchups were such that you know, we were able to get the ball inside against them and do some things there. We moved our ball well around the perimeter and created some open three-point attempts for our shooters. So, you know, that's what it a lot of times comes down to on a specific night is the individual matchups. And I think that'll be one of the key things in this game with Nevada.
Nevada is a team that we've seen several times in person. You've also seen them, I'm sure, numerous times on film. Why are they where they are in the Sweet 16, Coach?
Well, they got really good players, and they know how to take advantage of those good players in those one-on-one matchups I was just talking about. I mean, they, you know, their coach does a good job of finding the mismatch, and then they play to that and play off of that. And at the end of the day, you know, so many of the games, if you look at their schedule and you look back, so many games Nevada's had, you know, 7, 8, 9-point deficits throughout the first half. One thing that team does really well is they just keep playing. They just keep going. They just keep coming. And they can score in bunches, and they have, you know, 4 or 5 different guys that can score over 20 in a game. So they're a tough matchup for anybody.
Mike Burns joining us, assistant coach at Boise State, helping us break down Loyola and Nevada in tonight's Sweet 16 game in Atlanta. Coach, we were talking earlier in the week about preparing for a team that you would have no idea you're going to get in a tournament. Like, you know, the NIT, you guys had, what, 1 or 2 days to prepare for Washington. How many films would somebody typically look at with maybe 3 or 4 days? I mean, where would you spend your time prepping, and how would you get ready for a team that you had no idea you might be playing a week before that?
Well, no matter what no matter how it plays out, you always have an inkling. And so you set yourself up to, you know, reach out to people that if you haven't played this opponent, people that have played them and might know something about them. I mean, the coaching fraternity is a pretty tight-knit network, so everybody's going to talk at some point. And so the first thing you're going to do is you're going to try to get as much information about that team from people who've played them as you can. Then you're going to get game film, and, you know, you'll spend a lot of – you probably watch 3, maybe 4 of their most recent games, and combine that with getting, you know, personnel stuff off Synergy, which is a website that almost all colleges use that break down, you know, breaks down every possession of every game and every player's possessions and all that stuff. So you have ways to get that information together. The most important thing, though, with all of that is consolidating that information and putting it together in a presentable, pretty simple fashion for your team. Because the one thing you don't want to do is, you know, overwhelm your guys with too much information. And I think that's one of the strengths of Leon Rice over the years, is he's really good at getting a simple plan together for his team that they can go execute, and then putting them in a position to win those sort of games.
When you talk about films, Mike, and you're looking at certain games, more valuable to see a team at its best or more valuable to see a team at its worst?
Well, I mean, I think it's most valuable to see, you know, what they've been doing recently. Mm-hmm. Because the season evolves and there's, you know, I mean, lineups change, all that sort of stuff. So you really want to know what they've been doing the last 3, 4, 5 games. And then it's going to come down to specifics, you know. I mean, there's, how are they guarding ball screens? You know, how are they going to defend this? How are they going to do that? And then how do they play against the things that we do defensively? And, you know, some of the things, you know, we'll guard things a certain way, so you'll try to see how they're going to react to what you do. And that's basically what it comes down to. It's a little bit of a chess match in that regard. But like I said earlier, the one thing you don't want to do is overthink. I mean, you know, at this point in the season, teams are going to do what they do. And so everybody's going to have something that you need to take away, and hopefully, you know, you can do that to the best of your abilities and provide your guys with a simple enough plan to accomplish that goal.
Boise State assistant basketball coach Mike Burns joining us here on Idaho Sports Talk, 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, the ticket. Coach, what do you think Loyola's going to have the most trouble with Nevada, and what do you think Nevada's going to have the most trouble with Loyola?
Well, I think where Loyola is going to really struggle is I think the individual matchups are going to be difficult, because when you start Josh Hall and Jordan Caroline at kind of the 4 or 5, they don't really match up great on Caroline in either spot. I mean, their 4-man's a little smaller, so if he takes Caroline can do some things in the post, and if they put their big freshman on him, he's going to really struggle to stay with him in transition. And also, you know, keep on the perimeter. So I think that's going to be a key matchup. And then at the end of the day, you know, the nightmare matchup for everybody that plays Nevada is dealing with the Martin brothers, because they are, you know, they've got great size and great ability. And, you know, one of the hardest things with all of that with Nevada is when they get a defensive rebound, it doesn't matter who it is, 1 through 5, that person can take that ball and lead the break up the floor. And that really puts a lot of pressure on your transition defense. So, you know, I think the Jordan-Caroline matchup is going to be a key. I think transition defense is going to be a big key for Loyola, and then how they rebound against Nevada, and if they can offensive rebound against Nevada, I think those will be big keys for them.
What can Loyola do to hurt Nevada?
Well, the flip side of that coin is Loyola's, you know, in theory should have an advantage because Nevada's going to switch all the ball screens. So Loyola's ball screen set with their five man, the big freshman, when he rolls into the post, they should have an advantage in there. It's just a question of can they get the ball to him inside. And so if they can do that and get him the ball inside and kind of hurt them on the interior, that'll be an advantage. I think one thing Loyola is exceptional at, like I said earlier, is, and you saw in the Tennessee game, is they really move the ball around. I mean, they will run a set action, and out of that set action, they'll create closeouts, and they'll get that ball popping in the half court and find open shots for each other. So if they can get their ball moving and make those open shots, that's going to be a key. And then, you know, the other thing with Nevada is what they do a great job of is they make you play east and west because they'll switch all the ball screens and they just kind of stay in front of everything out there and they've got good length. If you can't play down against them or get downhill against that defense, you're going to struggle. So Loyola is going to have to be able to do that. And if they can, you know, they have an opportunity. But, you know, from my perspective, I just think Nevada is a bit of a matchup nightmare for them. And I would personally favor Nevada in that game.
And that was Mike Burns, Boise State assistant coach, talking about the matchup with Loyola and Nevada. He likes Nevada tonight. I think when you look at him and we've seen him, and maybe I'm colored by the, you know, rose-colored glasses watching that team lose by 34, but I don't see Loyola beating Nevada tonight. I think Nevada, I've watched them play too many times, and they look too good for me to go with Loyola.
Loyola Chicago has been a better team in the tournament than Nevada. Is that too bold of a statement for you, or do you agree with? Do you not agree with it? Loyola Chicago has played better basketball for longer stretches in Nevada.
For longer stretches, but the stretches that Nevada has looked good in, Nevada
the
has looked better
comebacks.
Than. But Loyola Chicago, they beat Miami and Tennessee, and Nevada has beaten Texas and Cincinnati.
Correct.
I would say, would you say fairly comparable teams?
No.
Nobody got beat.
Texas is a 10 seed. Loyola okay. Chicago beat a 6 and a 3.
But they beat a 10 and a 2. Cincinnati's the best of the four.
Yeah, but Miami and Tennessee put them together. That's a tougher path than having a 10 seed. And you were favored to win your first game. You were the better seed in the first game.
They were favored, correct.
Loyola Chicago has had the underdogs in both games. And I feel like they controlled both ways. It almost gave them away both ways. Like Loyola Chicago was the better team throughout the majority of the game in both, and then almost had mistakes at the end that made it let it slip and had a big shot at the end to kind of erase their mistakes at the end of games, which would be interesting if this is close late. Nevada's had things go their way late close. Loyola Chicago has made the last shot in those games, but they have played terribly down the stretch in a couple of them. So I don't think Nevada should feel too worried if they're behind.
We will pick all four games tonight in our final segment. So we'll see whether Chris has Nevada or Loyola, and I've kind of intimated that I would take the Wolfpack in the game tonight. This week's sweet deal, which goes tomorrow morning. You can get 50% off the EuroShack at KTIK.com. And again, it starts tomorrow morning at 9. The EuroShack offers authentic and unique takes on traditional Greek gyro and also with the freshest ingredients to be delivered at made-to-order pace. Yesterday was the first time that I ever had a gyro. I was really pleased. I really liked the lamb. It was lean. It was tasty. So go to KTIK.com for a sweet deal. It'll be valid at all 8 locations. Sweet deal tomorrow morning beginning at 9 at KTIK.com. Again, $25 gets you $50 at the Euro Shack. Coming up next in the update, off the field, where does Boise State continue to dominate the Mountain West? That's next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Tick.
Take a sports update sponsored by Franklin Building Supply. Visit franklinbuildingsupply.com. Denominate your high school student as a high school hero. Again, go to franklinbuildingsupply.com to learn more. Well, Boise State had a record 73 student athletes named to the academic All-Mountain West team yesterday. Broncos led all Mountain West schools in selections. The football team led all individual groups with 36 selections, and the soccer and women's cross-country team for the Broncos each set program records for selections since joining the Mountain West. So shout out Boise State, dominating the Mountain West on and off the field.
I must say, that doesn't surprise me. In the time I've been here, you look at the list of, you know, academic all-conference, and you expect Boise State to have a long list on any team that they will have. So great job by the athletic department, by all the student-athletes across the board. That's a nice one to have your school have more names listed on it than anybody else.
The team that's the defending Mountain West champions in women's basketball, Boise State, also, you know, three of the last 4 years, they've won the tournament championship. Like, so many of their players are engineering majors. Like, that's the other thing about it, is that, like, it's not just, you know, you're getting by and whatever. Like, engineering's a commitment, so to be able to play basketball and do that, certainly worth envying.
We'll talk about the Broncos football team. They had their first spring scrimmage today, and then after that, Coach Harsin talked, and he evaluated the first scrimmage of the spring for Boise State.
It went well. Just from a fundamental standpoint, we've been really working on the technique side, defense, offense, special teams, so we wanted to see that. There wasn't a lot of penalties. Thought the effort was good, you know, the way they were playing. Still a ton of things to improve on, but what we were looking for just overall, are we playing with good technique? Are we playing clean? Are we playing fast? And the execution will come. We're mixing guys in and out. So a lot like our first scrimmage we have in spring. This one, clean from that standpoint. We'll go back. We'll watch effort. We're going to watch execution. You know, what are they doing within the system? Are they doing the right things in the right places? I don't know that yet. Some turnovers on defense, some explosive plays on offense. So, you know, a little bit of back and forth, but as far as what we were looking for, of just seeing these guys play and play with pretty good technique and have the referees out there and throwing flags and not throwing flags, that's what we wanted to see today.
I always find it interesting going to the press conference after a scrimmage where you kind of get to ask questions, but you didn't see it, and they really don't know exactly how much of what they want to reveal, so it's always an interesting concept. But sounded kind of like a typical first scrimmage, like most things that were happening. But I always, as the head coach, like if you talk about some turnovers or some explosive plays on offense, if Andy Avalos is standing there asking the question, he's fired up about the turnovers. He's not fired up about the explosive plays, vice versa for Zach Hill. But it's always funny for the head coach, because you got to be excited about explosive plays on offense, but did your offense do it, or did your defense give it up, and vice versa?
That's the thing. Well, of course, it'll be more plentiful, I guess, when we see the spring game. We actually can see what's going on. But, like, as a fan, what do you cheer for in a spring game? Like, do you just cheer every play? Because every play, something good happened for somebody, mm-hmm. right? Either it's an incomplete pass, which is good, or a run that got nothing, which is good for a defense, or a gain of five on the ground, which is good for the running back. Like, something good happens for somebody and something bad happens for somebody, and when it's your same team on offense and defense, what do you cheer for?
Well, I've suggested this places I've been, but nobody's ever taken my suggestion.
Well, they're taking right now. They got some time to work it in.
When you come in the door, you get to choose to go for orange team or blue team. And you know how they give the pom-poms, you know, that you can shake? Give everybody whatever color they choose. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever seen the bottom of them, there's usually a little coin that you can kind of punch out where you kind of hold it. The coin sometimes can be used as like a redeem for buy one, get one free. Well, make one of the prizes if the blue team wins. Make one of the prizes if the orange team wins. If you pick the right team, you get some sort of free prize. So if you get something online where you get to win something, those people you think would want to yell for whatever color pom-pom they have.
I like it. I'm down for it. Now, Bob, you have power. You're Mr. Voice of the Broncos. Talk to somebody about this. This is great stuff. Do it. Mm-hmm. Get it working in this year's spring game.
Would make it fun, wouldn't it?
I'm down.
Well, Colorado State, according to the Denver Post, has found their new head basketball coach for men's basketball. They're expected to hire Nico Medved. He was the coach at Drake. He had also spent time at Furman and had been an assistant at Colorado State under Tim Miles for six seasons.
Well, I think Tim Miles' regime was viewed as very good. He left to go to Nebraska, to go to the Big Ten. So I think a lot of times when things kind of go south, they look back to a good time in the program. And Drake this year was 17-17. Drake was 10-8 in their conference. But I think they look at him building what Drake has and probably have an opinion of what they felt he was like when he was there with Tim Miles as an assistant.
They hired the coach of Drake. Why don't they just hire Drake to coach? Would that be more entertaining?
Also, what might happen? Be better for fundraising. He might be willing to kick extra money in to help him win.
I think Drake would absolutely do it because he's a basketball fan, first and foremost. The players allegedly mistreated. I don't think Drake would mistreat them. They did have a good old time playing for Drake. So instead of the coach of Drake, just hire Drake to coach.
I think Drake wants to coach a team from Canada. Isn't that where he's allegedly from?
I think he wants to coach a team with the best players. He's a fan of whatever team has the best players.
How much, he has a part. Does he have an interest in the Raptors?
Yes. I don't know if it's an ownership interest or if it's just he's interested in the team. But
well,
yeah.
I know he's there a lot. What I meant was, does he have any piece of the action with the Raptors?
I don't know if it's official or unofficial or whatever. I know they wore jerseys once that were inspired by him. So there's some kind of connection there for sure. I don't know if it's in the official capacity or not.
Does he have any concerts booked for the spring? If he does not, that means he's thinking the Raptors are going to be pretty good.
That's
if
true.
He does, yeah. Then look out. May develop a sore throat, and you might get refunds if you're at some of those cities, maybe.
Is that like Jack Nicholson with the Lakers? Does he never film anything during
the there are certain celebrity fans that just you identify with the team. I would think Jack Nicholson probably number one with the Lakers, especially where those seats are.
Yeah.
And Drake has similar seats at Toronto.
Yeah, Drake's out here distracting the inbounds passer, though. Like, you know, Jack is cool. He's out here chilling, you know, maybe he's smiling or he's, giving a little joke to somebody inbounding the ball. Drake's out here acting like what you would think the craziest fan in the student section would act like at a game. He's not chill.
And finally, we'll end the sports update. Just a reminder, the Sweet 16 starts tonight, and you can hear it right here on Sports Radio Ticket. A little Chicago and Nevada will start the action at 5:07 today. You can hear that on 1350 KTIK AM. That game will then be joined in progress at 6 after Caves and Prater. The nightcap tonight will have Gonzaga taking on Florida State. That game will start at 8 p.m.
Fish was miffed. You chose not to include the Giants exhibition game last night in the update today.
No, I didn't. I didn't want to distract Bob because we wouldn't have an update. It'd be Bob talking about how great the Giants are.
14 runs, 21 hits last night. Shut out the Diamondbacks. Why can't that game count?
It's about to say, it doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count.
It doesn't count. It's spring training.
That's why I wanted it to count. Major League Baseball, 1 week away, opening day next Thursday. And next Thursday will also be opening day for $4,000 a day. Your chance to win $1,000 four times a day right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Coming up next, we've got our quick hits. Where do West Coast NFL teams have a beef? And who would Chris want to send a thank you gift to in sports? Kind of interested in that question. Who Chris thinks he needs to thank? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Chris, so what did you learn about the Cavs beating the Raptors in the battle of a couple of teams that are going to fight, or shall we say on this show, battle? For the Eastern Conference Championship.
But there's no battle. There's no battling here. No, I mean, I don't even know if it'll be a battle for the Eastern Conference Championship as much. It could be a second round matchup because Cleveland right now is hovering around that 3, 4, 5, 6 position. Toronto's locked into the 1, so if Cleveland's 4 or 5 and they win their first round matchup, the team they'd face most likely would be the Raptors. That is, if the Raptors don't have one of the most epic playoff collapses of their existence, and they've had a couple of playoff shortcomings within the last 5 or 6 years. What I learned from the game, just ceiling of Cleveland, and I don't even know if they really showed the maximum ceiling because they didn't defend at all in this game, really. Maybe second half they got better, third quarter held Toronto to just 20, but 132-129 was the final. LeBron was just absurdly ridiculous. 35 points, 17 assists, 7 rebounds, no turnovers. That's right, he has 17 dimes without a turnover. You know, Ben Simmons the other day for the Sixers, he had 15 assists without a turnover, and that was a great game. But LeBron added 35 points on top of that. So LeBron's fantastic. He's still in the prime of his career. That is unreal. And him in a playoff series, you can't expect him to lose 4 out of 7. I don't care like who it's against. And that should scare Toronto because, again, Cleveland's ceiling, if they're engaged at least enough defensively with Kevin Love on the floor to help space it out, they're going to be tough no matter where they are in the bracket, home court advantage or not. And Toronto can have all the advantages they want with the regular season, 53 wins and counting. But when it's them and Cleveland in the playoffs, most people are going to pick Cleveland.
Well, they have the best player on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's a nice edge, if you will.
Topic number two.
What is the Big East proposing about one and dones?
Well, they want to have it be two or none. meaning that if you come to college, you got to stay for two, but you can also play none and go. Now, they come up with this big plan. There's also that Condoleezza Rice focus group, if you will, that's also trying to decide what they want to do. But nothing's going to happen unless the NBA, and maybe more importantly, the NBA Players Association wants to change it. Because you could say we want to have two or none as an NCAA and have somebody, okay, come into it. But if the league is not going to back you up on that and is not going to make it part of their rules, it doesn't matter. Because then all of a sudden you could leave after one and go. So they're going to need to get the Players Association and the league to sign off on anything that they want to do or it's not going to work. The other thing that the Big East wants to do, and again, how you get the genie back in the bottle is another question, but they want the NCAA and USA Basketball to take a larger role in non-scholastic basketball. That's not high school basketball. That's the summer games. That's the summer camps. And take it away from AAU, thus maybe getting rid of the shoe company influence. Good luck on that one.
Yeah, and that's, I don't like that. AAU, in a way, gets a bad rap. Like, AAU, there's some AAU coaches, programs that do look out for the individual, and that's saying like that college is, oh, like college, their coaches, and what's going on in college is the holy grail, and everything that's there is good, and everything with AAU is bad, and that should be, stop. That's not the case. There's shady characters within college, and there's good characters within AAU, and vice versa. So I hate the narrative of college. Everything about that is what it should be. In AAU, everything about that is negative and evil.
But I will say this. I think there are more honorable people coaching high school basketball than are involved with AAU. And the college coaches, the college coaches just need to look themselves in the mirror. They gave the power to the AAU coaches when they wanted to make the big recruiting season AAU season and not the high school season. If they had kept it the way it was in the past, the high school coaches would have had more influence than the AAU coaches.
Okay. You said like there were more honorable.
I think there are.
But based on what? Like, I would like to.
The high school coaches don't seem to be in, you know, for money, side deals. I think the high school coaches are a much more honorable group than the AAU coaches.
Okay, I would. That's not an outrageous opinion whatsoever. I would just like that backed up. Like, have you talked to people? Have you reported it? Like, if you are going to have that opinion,
I've just seen people and how they act. I think the people that are high school coaches, most of them are teachers. I think it's the other people are more.
How many AAU coaches are you in contact with?
Zero.
See that's
but I'm
the
also
thing. Like
I'm just looking at it. That's my take on it. You want me to go out and make some calls? I don't know how I can ask the question. Are you honorable or are you not? But my gut feeling, watching what goes on in AAU and what goes on in high school sports, my money is on that the high school coaches are more honorable.
But that's what my frustration comes in, is when people who have no connection to AAU make statements about AAU. Like, you never played it. You don't talk to AAU coaches. So now you're going to go out here and make grand statements about AAU. You haven't, like, once you go out here and talk and report or been a part of it, then I feel like you have more credibility with this opinion, or else you're just saying stuff.
I'm saying it, and I say it from different things I've read and different people I've talked to in the college business. I think I will stand on that as my opinion. The high school coaches are more credible.
Topic number three.
All right, Chris, who in sports would you send a thank you gift to?
All right, so this is based on this story where a 23-year-old golf fan sent a thank you note to Tiger Woods' surgeon, the person who helped fix Tiger Woods' back. Literally sent him a gift of like an edible arrangement. Fish, you have the details on what exactly he sent.
It was some chocolate-covered strawberries. Have you never sent or received an edible arrangement, Chris?
No.
Have you seen the commercials?
Yeah, maybe. I've heard them on the radio.
I think Mother's Day is coming up, Chris. You should send Mama Lewis a nice edible arrangement.
Is that the same as sending chocolate? I've sent chocolate before.
It's fruit chocolate.
Or I've bought chocolate. Okay. I don't know. Maybe it's a good idea. Good suggestion.
And it looks like a bouquet of flowers.
Okay. That's a good suggestion. I'll take that up. But who would me? I'm a 26-year-old sports fan. Who would I send a thank you gift to? I think this is a question that anybody can answer. In sports, who would you think send a thank you gift to? For me, it'd be Sam Hinkie, the GM, former GM of the Philadelphia 76ers, who got wrongly dismissed by the NBA stepping in and saying that, we can't accept all this losing. By the way, have you looked at the NBA standings and what the bad teams are doing? They're continuing to lose as many games as possible. But he said that being this 500 team that was borderline playoffs every single year, with no hope of the future getting better, but no hope of getting significantly worse, being stuck in the middle is the worst place to be, so let's do what we can to maximize our future
assets for the Sixers to have a ceiling that is worth, you know, maybe a championship or two. And right now they're in a spot where they're the 4 seed, they're 10 games over 500, 40-30, led by one second-year player and one first-year player, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. He did what was necessary. He got fired for doing what was necessary, so I want to send him a thank you gift. Bob, who's
your pick? I think he would be a guy that probably deserves it. He's not had the best things happen to him since being fired. You were running an NBA team, and now you're not.
Yes. Who's your pick? Everybody has to have a guy out there to send a thank you gift to.
How about Bruce Bochy? Allowing me to enjoy 3 world championships, and maybe he can share it with Brian Sabian, who, by the way, is now back running the team a little more after passing it off to Bobby Evans, who my friend and I think very poorly of, as we were talking about the Giants the other day. So I would say Sabian and Bochy for allowing me to celebrate 3 world championships, 10, 12, 14.
Fish, you got one?
Yeah, Dr. James Andrew. He was the one who did the surgery on Drew Brees' arm as he was a free agent.
That's
the San Diego Andrews, Chargers.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he would get a lot from a lot of sports fans.
Probably get a lot from a lot of athletes, yes. too. He's been at the cutting edge of
cutting
surgeries.
Edge.
Yeah. Up next, basketball coverage here. The first voice you'll hear tonight on the Westwood One broadcast, Jason Horowitz. He's hosting. He's up with us next live on Sports Radio The Ticket. T-minus 3 hours to the start of our coverage over on 1350 AM of NCAA basketball. 93.1 FM will join at 6 o'clock, so an hour will go by. And then after you listen to Caves and Prater, you can get the full coverage of basketball. And the voice you will hear tonight from the studio is Jason Horowitz, who has been studio host for Westwood One's coverage. And, Jason, my first question to you, tonight compared to last Thursday, it's got to feel like a piece of cake. You only have 2 evening games going on at the same time where you had, what, 4 different sessions going on with 4 games at each of those sessions last week?
Yeah, but that means I have to talk more. I can't just fill it by going to another game.
Oh, but I was thinking you'd have to start. I mean, you came on out here, I want to say, last week at 10 o'clock in the morning.
I think 9.
Okay, 9.
So we actually, not every...
I guess 9 every Mountain Time?
Up, but 9 Mountain Time, 8 Pacific.
Wow.
On Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the first 2 days at with a show called The Tournament Today. Which is the same tonight. We get going with the tournament tonight at 6 Eastern, so 4 your time. But yeah, it's an hour pregame. It's all of it, and then it's right before tip. But yeah, those are long days. But yeah, tonight is easier, but it's also it's funny that the first 2 days are the best days because there's so much action. It seems at the same time. But I don't know if you guys feel the same way. The last couple of years, it's been the Sunday that's been the best, because Saturday's kind of lacked drama the last couple of years, although Michigan did hit the buzzer beater on Saturday night. But Sunday was just nonstop. Oh, my God, how did that happen? And that was the same case last year, too, because that was the same day that South Carolina beat Duke and some of the other things that happened on Sunday. So pretty incredible how it's shaped up.
I guess it's bracket tips for you, too, that Sunday. Be wary of the favorites on Sunday and take note of that. But in a way, can you kind of take us through, how do you guys do it? How many people are involved in the process of tracking all the games, getting the call for all the games, the highlights together? Because we hear it here on Sports Radio, The Ticket. The production sounds great when it's all done.
It's not as many as you'd think, which is a credit to the people that work for Westwood One. It is we have one person in terms of highlights for every game, so they're cutting up different highlights and things of that nature. We have what would be the equivalent, and I'm trying to put this into terms so that people who have no idea of how radio board hopping works could visualize it, but basically there is one person in charge of each of the 4 sites running those individually, and when we are taking them on the network from their games that are running, either they're streaming or they're on the SiriusXM dedicated channels or the TuneIn mobile app and bringing them up, that is a separate person. And so that's kind of how it's made flawlessly. But it is, there are so many things that have to be timed up correctly, from the fact that if we're on one game and the other game's in a commercial, we can't go there. If the other game is doing a sponsored read, you can't join a sponsored read in the middle of it, so you got to wait. So that's kind of where the whole timing aspect shakes up, and where I come in and where our executive producer comes in, the fact that he knows, he's listening to 4 broadcasts at once, which is kind of what he does. but it's a pretty incredible thing that I think people would actually have to see it to have any idea of how it actually works.
Jason Horowitz joining us. You'll hear him tonight coming up on the coverage of NCAA basketball from Westwood One. So you talk about an executive producer. Is this person the grand poobah that will decide, okay, the one game is not going as well as we'd like, they're winning by 15, we're going to switch to another one?
Sort of. Over the last 5 years, I think he's listened to me a little bit more about where to go. But, no, in general, he is the grand poobah of what you're listening to. But you know what? There's actually more that goes into that too, because like you guys, you know, radio stations have to follow formats, right? And so if you guys are expecting a break that you're going to have as opposed to one that we're going to have, if that game in Boise, for instance, is about to go to an under 16 and that's scheduled to be a station commercial, not a network commercial, you know, we have to know that. So like, there's certain things that kind of dictate where we go, and that's kind of where I come in terms of different radio cues and all that stuff. But he's the decision maker of where we're going. Yes.
Jason Horowitz joining us, Westwood One studio host. And on that note, when one of the times that I was listening was, you know, right after the 16-1 upset, UMBC beating Virginia, and hearing you and the genuine shock in your voice and hearing your conversation, I thought it was really good stuff, because you guys literally sounded stunned as you were having the conversation. Like, when something like that happens, how do you consume that? How do you cover that?
Well, I hope we sound stunned. It never happened before. I mean, and we were just like everybody else. I'm just like everybody else. I'm a huge college basketball fan. And more than that, the tournament has always been my favorite thing. So that's nothing new. When upsets happen, I think we all consume them the same way. It's like, no, that was how my bracket was, or I expected this, or I expected that, or hey, I thought about that upset. I'm excited about that. Now, you know, that part of it kind of changes a little bit, but when a 16 beats a 1 and it's history and it happened the way that it happened, those emotions were general, they were genuine emotions, because those guys on UMBC, maybe they expected it, but no way did they expect to beat Virginia by 20. And nobody watching, there's so many things in the tournament that are, we've seen before. We've seen 15 beats twos. We've seen it happen twice on the same day. A couple of years ago, Michigan State lost. Like, they're still jaw dropping, but they're not absolutely stunning, because we've seen it. You hadn't seen a 16 beat a one. We've always talked about that. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. But until it actually happens, you never really believe that it's going to happen. And then it happens. And you had a few minutes to get prepared for it. I mean, Tony Bennett said this week that that he knew at like 5 or 6 minutes to go that they were going to lose. And that's amazing for a coach to say that.
Well, I do think that it's a different feel when you lose and you know you're going to lose coming down the stretch, like that game or, a couple of the other games that were fairly lopsided, than it is when you get, like you're Oklahoma. And you're Houston. I'm sorry. I can see Kelvin Sampson's face, and all I can think of was Oklahoma. And you're Houston, and you lose on basically a half-court shot. I would think, especially for post-game interviews, Tony Bennett, I thought, came out really classy, but he did have a while to think about it, as you say, especially if he thought he was going to lose for the final 5 minutes of the game, or somebody that you might talk to on a post-game show might have thought for all the time in the world they were going to win until that last shot went in.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. We had Calvin Sampson on our radio show today, and Calvin Sampson said that he figured out, he kind of took some inspiration on what to tell his team by listening to Tony Bennett the night before, which is interesting because Tony Bennett said this week on SiriusXM that he wasn't going to do the interview on CBS. And, assistant told him he didn't have to do it. He's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he changed his mind 20 seconds later. And he's gotten so much praise for how he handled it, and he wasn't even going to do it. So we so often remember the winners for March Madness, and people are going to remember the shot that Poole hit for Michigan. They might not remember that Devin Davis missed free throws, but with Scott Van Pelt talked about that earlier this week on ESPN. March Madness, every March Madness has a winner and a loser. Mm-hmm. There's two people who are in March Madness. And we forget about the stories of the guys who have to deal with the loss of March Madness, because you experience the shock and awe of the shot going in more so than you do of the, oh my God, I can't believe that guy just lost. But those guys have to deal with it too, both coaches and players. And it's what makes this so real. I mean, the tournament is so emotional for the players involved and for us who would consume it. It's what makes it so great.
We're joined by Jason Horowitz, the Westwood One studio host. You hear him right here on Sports Radio The Ticket with the NCAA tournament coverage. Now, I guess kind of looking forward, the ones and two seeds that are still here, is there a squad that kind of steps out as that team that is the most likely to navigate on through as the best team left, or you kind of expect it to be more the same as what we've seen the first week?
To the Final Four or to win it? Because I think the expectation to get to the Final Four is that there's nobody that has an easier path than Kentucky, right? Because they're a five, and Kansas State's kind of an ick all year, and you know, nobody really knows about Loyola, but Loyola's been really good all year, but it's still Loyola versus Kentucky if that were to happen, and Nevada's only led in this tournament for like 4 minutes, but here they are coming off the comebacks that they did, and you know, so you got all those things, so I think people expect Kentucky to be there, but other than that, you know, if you were to say that Kansas is going to beat Duke, sure. If you were going to say Duke's going to beat Clemson, sure. Right? If you were going to say that Villanova loses to West Virginia, sure. Like, you could see anything happening and believe it. The only thing that I could not, like, that me personally, and Chris, I know this is going to be a shock to you since we both went there. If Syracuse wins another game, I'd be shocked.
They're playing a conference opponent, though. Are you really shocked when they face a conference opponent and win? Like they're familiar common opponents.
They're so bad at offense. Syracuse is so bad at offense. They're terrible. In fact, Jim Boeheim said today when he was addressing the media at the conference in Omaha, he's like, "We generally try to do offense and defense really well. We just can't do one of those this year." Now I don't know if he still understands. Like, you know, underselling his team on purpose. But they have scored the fewest points per game at Syracuse since Jim Boeheim was a freshman walk-on. That is insane.
Wow.
And they're in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I look at this, and you look at Kentucky's path to the championship. Davidson, Buffalo, Kansas State, Loyola or Nevada, and then nobody seeded better than a three in the other half to get to the championship. I'll give you Syracuse. They have to win a play-in game, and then they win against TCU. But let's start with this gauntlet. Michigan State, Duke, Kansas, Villanova to get to the championship game.
Yeah, if that happens, I would tell you they deserve to be at the tournament, but not until then.
The power of the bracket itself.
Jason, thanks so much. We'll look forward to hearing you tonight, bouncing back and forth, offering commentary between games and at halftime. You do a great job, and we appreciate you giving us a few minutes of your time today on a busy day.
Nope. I can't believe you guys didn't ask me what color a tennis ball is.
What color a tennis ball is?
Yeah, that's like the new thing. Isn't that the new thing going on right now? Is it yellow? Is it green? Everyone's having debate about that. You guys got to check out social media once in a while.
All right. Is it green or is it chartreuse? Or is that what they're asking? What they call that color?
I don't know. Did we start discussing a hot dog a sandwich?
Is it yellow? Is it green? I don't know. I always thought it was green, but I guess I'm wrong.
I'm over with green, but if we're going to start debating is a hot dog a sandwich and all these kinds of things, we'll never end the show.
I thought it was kind of a mixed blend, but whatever.
Jason,
is a hot dog a sandwich? Just as long as you have food between games, right? That's all that matters.
Hey, listen, if we're having hot dogs and catering, we're having problems.
Right. Well, I hope Westwood One comes up better than that for you. Thanks for your time. Green. I always thought it's kind of a blend. I would have said chartreuse.
I didn't know this was a thing that was being debated on social media.
Fish?
Fish isn't really hot in these social media streets. I'm following. What, close to 1,000 people? I haven't seen this come across the timeline.
Mm. And why would anybody care?
I mean, Roger Federer weighed in on it, so clearly.
Well, so what does he say? He's seen enough of them. I'll take his opinion more than others.
Maybe Fish, that's our tease. That has to be our tease.
When we come back,
yes.
we'll tell you what Roger Federer said about the color of a tennis ball. And this week's sweet deal, you get 50% off the Euro Shack at KTIK.com. Again, starts tomorrow morning at 9. The Euro Shack offers authentic, unique takes on traditional Greek gyros with the freshest ingredients delivered at a made-to-order pace. Yesterday was the first time I'd ever had a gyro. It was very good. I really enjoyed the lamb. I hadn't had lamb before, and I really liked the lean tastiness to it. So go to KTIK.com for a sweet deal valid at all 8 locations. Sweet deal, again, starts tomorrow morning at 9. Better hurry. They run out fast at KTIK.com. Again, $25 gets you $50 at the Euro Shack. Again, what color is a tennis ball? What does Roger Federer think? What does Chris think? What do you think? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Roger, are tennis balls green or yellow?
They're yellow, right?
Yeah. I think they're green. My son thinks they're yellow.
They're yellow.
That was Roger Federer when asked if a tennis ball is green or yellow. It says the official color, when you look at the rule book, they claim it's optic yellow, whatever that means. But they've been described as fluorescent yellow, chartreuse, which was the color I said, lime green, and the fun imaginary composite Jello or Gello. And it said, and this is something I didn't know, 1972, up until then, the tennis balls were either black or white. And they changed them throughout most of the tournaments to this sort of a concoction between green and yellow. And I bet you can guess which was the last tournament to take it to yellow-green.
Probably Wimbledon.
That is correct. the stuffy one, 86 was the first time they went to the colored balls.
Wow. Yeah, the more you know, I suppose. I think they're the color of Oregon's jerseys. When Oregon wears those like crazy like highlighter type jerseys, and Baylor, whatever color you describe those, which is
highlighter green.
Yeah, that's always a tough one. But we usually say green, right?
Well, I think that the jerseys that they would have that you're thinking about are greener than the ball.
Okay.
But
I don't know. I would usually say green unless you play with them a lot. I always thought like they're when you get them out the little, and I'm not no tennis player by any stretch. Maybe Jeff is probably the best one to weigh in on this conversation. I always thought they were green unless you played with them a lot and they kind of get worn down, then they kind of turn yellow.
The other question on color of balls, I've never seen and I wonder if it's illegal at the PGA, and this is maybe a JP question. But you see people, when you go out and hack, use either orange balls or sort of the chartreuse balls. Can you legally play with a color ball on the PGA Tour if you wanted to? Is there anything in the rule book that says you must use a white ball? Everybody on this show gives...
We're stumped. We're stumped. We have no idea.
I'm still upset. Tennis balls are not green, Chris. They're yellow. I never would call them green. Never in a million years did I think this was a needed debate we had to have.
Yeah,
they're yellow.
This is what Jason Horowitz doing, just throwing off the entire show by talking about, we didn't ask him about the color of a tennis ball. We differ. We differ on this.
Today was the final day of spring football practice prior to taking a week off for spring break. April 14th will be the spring game. That's a Saturday. It'll be kicking off at 3:30, the blue team against the orange team. When you look at last season, there was one stat that stuck out like a sore thumb, just like there was one from the 2016 season that stuck out like a sore thumb as well. It was turnover margin the year before. Broncos in 2016 forced nine and gave up 18 for a minus nine. Last year, that was turned around completely. Cut the turnovers down by 5 to give up 13 turnovers, but forced 26 instead of 9 to go from a minus 9 to a plus 13. Chris, when I looked at all the stats and looking at everything down there, the worst statistic on the board was fourth down conversions. 3 out of 17, 18%. That was 129 out of 129. We asked Coach Harsin today about it and if that was going to be maybe an emphasis on something that they were going to work on as they did turnovers last year, better fourth down percentage.
That was a bad number. Yeah, and we know that. You know, we changed, if you go back a couple years, where we were in turnovers and that large jump we made, it was the largest in college football in the turnover battle. And, you know, we gave up as few as I've ever given up on the offensive side. And we got on the defensive side the turnovers we needed to create, you know, where it put us in the country. The fourth down, you know, we've been talking about that. You know, believe it or not, we actually talk about fourth down. And what we want to do and when we think we should go and Not when we have to, not in those situations, like when we want to. Hey, we're on this part of the field. We think if we're within this distance in this game, maybe we're playing an offense. We feel like we can score points. Maybe we feel like we got to be more aggressive. And we did that, and it did not work, bottom line. We went back through it, and it's a combination of things. If it's, you know, if anything, I don't think we prepared it well enough. I'll just put that back on me. Play selection, play execution, whatever. We got to do a better job of emphasizing it. And we tried to last year, and it didn't show up. And we're going to go for it on fourth down. We're going to have to, so we got to prepare for that.
So he's talking about fourth downs, about not going for it. I went back through things. And when you lose only three games, things can be a problem and might make it so that you don't win by as big a margin as you would like. But there were two of the losses where, to me, a fourth down play that they didn't get was absolutely crucial. But only one of them, in my opinion, falls into the category that he's talking about, where you got fourth and really short, and you're lining up to go for it. The fourth down was crucial in the Virginia game, down 14-7 on a fourth and three on their own 40. They went for a fake punt. It didn't work. Yeah. That, to me, is kind of a trick play. It doesn't work. It isn't executed. You don't go for it. But the fourth and one, early in the second quarter, when you're tied 7-7 at Fresno State in a game that you lost where you had momentum, to me, that fourth down sneak, not getting that, much like the fourth downs against Air Force the season before. So, you know, the fact that they converted just 3 out of 17 for 18%, to me, it's a couple of key ones that are costly, not the fact that you didn't make a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would go to this, like that answer where he said we have to focus on it, we have to emphasize it, we have to work on it. My question to that would be, like, how do you work on fourth downs versus, like, third downs? If you're working on third and shorts, isn't that by nature working on fourth downs?
Mm-hmm.
Because like their fourth down doesn't magically make it, oh, you only can run these plays. Like when you have a third and short and you work on your third down plays, by definition, that is working on your fourth and shorts, right? Because the emphasis is third down, we need to get it. Just saying it's fourth down, does that make it all of a sudden significantly different of a challenge for you?
But do you think that when it's third and one, there is... Like on a second and one, you gain 9 on first down. I can fake the dive and pull back and go for the bomb on second and one with a high percentage because if it's incomplete, you know, I still have third and one and I should be able to pick up the first down. But is there still enough of a third down you could do something different on third and one that you wouldn't feel on fourth down that the defense would maybe be a little softer at the line on third and one?
But why couldn't you do it on fourth? Like, that argument says, like, is this highlighted on fourth down? Whatever you do on third and short, you could do on fourth and short. Is there anything that
But if you went for a bomb on third down, you could still come back and pick up fourth and one. Where if you went for something that was a little more high risk, you couldn't come back and pick it up on fourth on fifth down unless you were in that one Colorado-Missouri game.
That's true. Go deep anyway. You're probably more likely to get a high percentage or a higher percentage of getting that deep pass completed because they're really selling out to stop it. I don't know. I just don't think it drastically differs the drill that you do or whatever reps that you're doing to work on third and shorts. So were they significantly bad on third and short? Maybe they weren't great on third and short, and that relates to being bad on fourth down. But I think the problem would be short yardage then more than it would be fourth down, right?
If you were going to look at it that way, maybe so. But I don't remember them being terrifically awful on third downs this year.
So then it's just almost like a weird statistical anomaly that you can't really work on. Because if you're good on third and short but not good on fourth and short, then what was it about fourth down that –
Third down percentage, and again, this is overall third downs. This could be third and an inch or third and 25. Boise State was 46% on third down.
But they were
season.
Really good at third and longs that stretch last year where they were, you know, winning the BYU game, fit into that one, where they were actually pretty good on third and long. But it's hard unless we had somebody to break it down in the third and
Interesting, when you look at team stats from last year and you're thinking about where do the team stats need to get better, dead last in fourth downs.
That's bad.
Yeah. Now, a couple of the games, the one I mentioned was the fourth down sneak against Fresno. There was another fourth down later in the game they didn't make, but it was fourth and 10 deep in their own territory, you know, in the fourth quarter when you're trailing by 11. You're going to go for that. And fourth and 10 from your own 10 or 15-yard line, those aren't ones you're going to probably pick up.
Yeah.
I mean, so... We'll see, but it was just kind of interesting to hear what a coach says about looking at a number that you like to see reversed in the coming season. Major League Baseball opening day, a week from today. That's March the 29th. It's also opening day for 4K a day. Your chance to win $1,000 four times a day on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, in the update, Boise State had its first scrimmage. It was closed. What kind of information does Coach Harsin want to give about it? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Franklin Building Supply. Visit franklinbuildingsupply.com and nominate your high school student as a high school hero. Again, go to franklinbuildingsupply.com to learn more. Well, Boise State held their first spring scrimmage of the year, and the one right before they go on spring break. And Coach Harsin today, the scrimmage was closed, but he talked about at his press conference afterwards who excelled at the scrimmage for the Broncos.
Kay Cole had an interception today. DeAndre Pierce is out there making plays. I thought overall on the defensive side, I thought we did a really good job up front. I thought the linebackers played well in coverage. I thought the safeties moved around well. Corners were sharp today, but safeties really showed up, in my opinion, from what I saw. Offensively, Skylar Seabold running the ball did a good job. Thought the O-line decent, the first group, you know, moving it, denting the defense a little bit, getting some surge. That showed up. Wide receivers, probably a little bit of inconsistency. Still some big plays, but some ones that we had opportunities early in the scrimmage. So, you know, just not the consistency. I think the technique, I think what we're doing was good. The consistency, you know, on both sides, still not there yet.
Well, if it's the first scrimmage, you have two scrimmages, and then you're going to have fall camp, which is going to last about 3 weeks or so. I wouldn't expect the team to be that consistent, but at least it sounds like coming out of it, you know, he didn't say there were any major injuries, unlike, you know, Nick Saban was talking about his first practice where his quarterback Tua gets the thumb injury. So far, so good.
Yeah, let's start to look at Coach a little sideways if he said, like, the receivers were excellent and so were the corners. How could they both be really good? See that there, the receivers were out here catching and the corners weren't stopping them from catching it, or the receivers were not catching the passes because the corners were blanketing them.
The one thing either wasn't asked or he didn't volunteer. Did one side of the ball definitively win the scrimmage?
Well, because usually it sounds like the defense did. He said all the units for defense, the linebackers and the secondary, and the receivers were inconsistent. He didn't mention the quarterback.
Usually when one wins one, the other side of the ball wins one of the other scrimmages.
So you think it's going to flip?
It usually does. It always seems to. I don't know whether they encourage it to flip, like make things a little more favorable to the other side of the ball.
Well, according to the Denver Post, Colorado men's basketball has found their new head coach.
You mean Colorado State?
Colorado State, yes. Colorado State is expected to hire Nico Medved as their next basketball coach. He spent this last year at Drake. He had also been at Furman and had spent 6 years as an assistant at Colorado State under Tim Miles.
Again, when you pick somebody that's worked on your staff before, and it was during the successful tenure, Tim Miles, they had some very good teams before he went on to Nebraska, you should know what you're getting. I mean, there should be enough people in the athletic department should know, you know, what kind of a person that you're hiring. And I think in light of, you know, maybe why they got rid of Larry Eustace, I think in addition to trying to find somebody good, I think they want to find somebody that is going to be good for everybody to work with, too.
Yeah, if misbehaving a bit as the head coach was the reason that the coach had to get shown the door, you need to make sure you know for certain the personality of the coach that you're bringing in. And I'm sure that he'll, I don't know, player's coach is too far of a way to look at it, because, you know, it didn't seem like Eustace was exactly a player's coach given some of the allegations that were there. So when something like that happens, it doesn't work out for one dominant personality, then you tend to go the complete opposite with the next personality.
Well, yesterday on Twitter, Deion Sanders was talking about NFL defensive backs, a position he knows quite well, and he angered a couple fans, at least according to himself. The Hall of Famer said Tyrann Mathieu is the best safety in the NFL, and then a fan by the name of Kevin Byard questioned him, said, "Where's your backup? Where's your proof?" Sanders then clapped back at Byard, saying, "Well, you're looking at writers who tell you." Byard, of course, said, "How can you not name the first team All-Pro safety or any Pro Bowlers in your list?" Sanders said, "You're looking at writers who tell you what's best. I know who players and former players is the best. I rest my case. You continue to be a fan. I will continue to be the man. The only problem is Kevin Byard is a safety for the Tennessee Titans who led the league in interceptions and was named to the Pro Bowl last year."
And he's having this Twitter conversation as if he thinks he's talking to a fan.
Yep.
Well,
Even as a blue check mark and everything.
I would hope that if you cover the – is he still on TV?
Yeah.
Does he still cover the league?
On the NFL Network.
You should probably know who leads the league in interceptions. That name should not be something that's foreign to you.
Well, with the NFL catch rule being reworked, another rule change is coming along, according to League Vice President Troy Vincent. There are now discussions about changing defensive pass interference becoming a 15-yard penalty no matter where the incident takes place, unlike now where it is a spot foul. Vincent said yesterday, change is gaining momentum, and that there could be a vote on the proposal as early as next Tuesday.
So basically going to the college rule. That would change the game, in my opinion, dramatically.
Because
how many times do you see somebody get 50 yards because somebody bumps into somebody? I think I'd be more in favor of it. But it would certainly fly in the face of every rule that usually gets made and put on the books benefits the offense. This one would certainly benefit the defense.
Also benefit fantasy. Less yards that are attributed to penalty yards means more yards for actual people to get.
Unless you've got a receiver who beats somebody deep and they just trip him for 15 yards.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Then you're losing touchdowns in fantasy.
Because, like, I
think you'd be more apt to interfere. I would.
It encourages interference because if they're getting beat on a deep ball, just push him. All right, so what? He doesn't complete a 60-yard pass and said it's a 15-yard penalty. Maybe that's the kind of balance that's needed. But I looked at the NFL. My biggest complaint about the league generally was the lack of offense. For a lot of these games, I was looking at the halftime scores, 3-0, 3-0, 6-0, 6-3, 7-3.
But do you think maybe they think that it'll make more offensive plays keep coming? Because if you got 15 yards, then the offense would keep going. You get an automatic first down. But I guess it wouldn't.
You're not closer to the end zone, though.
True.
Need to get close to the end zone to score, and that's what. I don't know why. Have people complained about the pass interference being a thing? Like, I've always thought that people complain more about the college being 15 than they complain about the NFL being a spot foul. Maybe it's just a sample size of what I've seen, and I'm not saying it's gospel, but I would think the college one would be the one that should be changed because, again, you could interfere down the field and it's just 15 yards. That seems unfair.
I only hear more people complain, like you said, Chris, when it's their guy in fantasy football who gets interfered at the 1 yard line. They lose a 60-yard catch and then they run the ball on the next down. That's the only people who I ever hear complain about pass interference.
But they'd still complain if they got 15 yards or whether they got the whole thing because you don't get the whatever the gain would be.
No, but 15 yards, you'd have another chance. You'd have maybe 40 more yards as opposed to a spot foul. You may have 2 yards left.
Right. Well, if you've got the running back, you might be thrilled.
That's David Johnson capitalizing on all these touchdowns for guys interfering with Larry Fitzgerald.
Hey, whatever works. And then on the sports update, one quick reminder. Sweet 16 starts tonight right here on Sports Radio Ticket. Loyola Chicago and Nevada will start the action at 5 o'clock tonight. That'll be heard over on 1350 KTAK AM. Then we'll join the games in progress here on the FM after Caves and Prater today at 6. The nightcap will include Gonzaga. They'll take on Florida State. That game will start at 8 p.m. Mountain Time.
When we come back, Quick Picks returns. Who do Chris and I have in tonight's Sweet 16? 4 matchups. We'll give you picks on all of them next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball. Open up a fortune cookie or maybe even flip a coin.
I get him into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some Quick Picks and Predictions with Bob and Chris.
Quick Picks and Predictions brought to you by Purim Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, and accessories located right inside West East Garden Lanes in Garden City. It's been a while since we've done Quick Picks, but with the Sweet 16 right here, and you can hear it tonight on Sports Radio Ticket starting at 5 with Loyola Chicago versus Nevada. That'll be on the AM. We'll join that in progress at 6 after Caves and Prater, so we'll start with that game. Bob, who you got? Loyola Chicago or Nevada? You've seen both of them.
I've seen both of them, and I may have seen one of them at its best or pretty close, and one of them certainly at rock bottom. So I'm going to go with Nevada. I think they have too many playmakers on their team. I think the Martins and Jordan Caroline are really, really good. I think they're rolling. I think Nevada gets by Loyola tonight, and I don't think they're going to come from behind to win the game. I think they're going to be ahead throughout most of it.
Chris?
Nevada has hit the highest percentage of jump shots in the tournament so far, and I think it was on SVP yesterday. They shoot actually a higher percentage when those jump shots are contested, which is kind of absurd. You shoot better on contested jumpers than open jumpers. That's usually not sustainable. Like, if you keep shooting these contested jumpers, you probably can't live on them. You want open ones. But that said, I like their defense, and that's the reason why I'm going with Nevada, because lost in the heroics of the Martins and how they're leading the team back with hot shooting and these and ones and going to the rim and all that, the way they can get back into the game is because they can defend. Like, they, when they get locked into that mode where, all right, we need to get stops, they can actually get stops. They're switching, as Mike Burns said on this show earlier on today, Boise State assistant coach, of course, game plan for both of those teams. He favored Nevada in it. Because Nevada's defense is really switchy. It's tough to score on when they get engaged into that mode. So I'm going to pick Nevada here.
Winner of that game in the South Region will play the winner of this game, Kentucky and Kansas State. We saw Kentucky here in Boise. So, Chris, who you got, the Wildcats or the Wildcats?
Dean Wade for Kansas State. People thought he was their best player going into the tournament. And there was a question as to whether he'd play in the first game and wasn't able to be a factor against Creighton. And then they ended up facing a 16 seed in their second game. Like, usually you would think you'd get the one instead of being a 9 seed when you win. You get the one. You end up getting a 16. So Wade didn't get a chance to really go in that game either. And Kansas State won. So they've been able to get to this point without Wade. And from what I've gathered, he's still not really ready. Like, he said he's 98%, but then he's kind of backed off of that, and maybe he'll be able to play some minutes, but not his usual workload. I just think that's too much to manage now going up against Kentucky. So, Kentucky.
Bob?
I think Kentucky, I think that, you know, they've got the talent. Sometimes they've been up and down. I know they start five freshmen, but John Calipari and Kentucky, this is one you can't lose. You complain about your draw. You end up maybe getting the easiest draw in the history of getting to the Final Four for a 5 seed. I don't see Kentucky getting stopped by Kansas State. You thought different teams like Gonzaga had a home court advantage. This place tonight, they call it Catlanta for basketball postseason. This is going to be one of the biggest home court advantages in the tournament. Tonight they're playing at the Hawks Arena, not nearly as big as playing it at the Falcons. I thought it was going to be Falcons, but it's at the Hawks. I think Kentucky wins. I think they're going to win by 10.
The real question, will Calipari find his donut spot?
Hopefully. I don't know if there's a DK Donuts over there.
You may have him flown in. Maybe.
Maybe. Well, another game tonight, Texas A&M and Michigan. Bob, who you got?
I'm going to take Michigan. They seem to be a team that's blessed, that's on a roll. They also have one of the coaches that's one of my all-time favorite opposing coaches. I think John Beilein, one of the classiest, one of the best coaches. I want to see him get to a Final Four. So I think Michigan over Texas A&M. I'd like to see the Wolverines keep on rolling.
Chris?
Could you make the case that the best game played in the tournament was Texas A&M in their game against North Carolina? Mm-hmm. Just like how they were able to just whoop them with tempo. Just athletes in the front courts. Robert Williams is a guy who might be a lottery-type guy, maybe top 15. If Texas A&M looks anywhere near that they did against North Carolina, they're going to win this game, and it might not be close again. Michigan is turned into Michigan State in a way, right? They get close wins in March, and John Beilein has found the Tom Izzo game plan of finding a way to win when it doesn't look like you're supposed to. They're a better seed here, Michigan, but I'm going to go Texas A&M.
And then finally, the nightcap tonight, we saw one of these teams in Boise, Florida State taking on Gonzaga. Chris, who you got?
This could be the best game today. Like, in terms of high-level basketball played by both teams, if you say which game might most likely to come down to the last 2 minutes, would this be the game you'd pick?
Of the ones tonight, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say so, too. I'm going Gonzaga. Gonzaga gets it done. We're just here in Boise, and maybe it's because I'm picking this for bracket reasons, because I did have the Zags in the Final Four. Mainly, I didn't even have them last year when they had the better team, but I think this year the draw kind of works out in their favor. 9 seed Florida State, they've been up and down throughout the year. They haven't been that great. I'm going with Gonzaga here.
I'm going to go with Florida State to win the game, and maybe I'm doing it because I want a story. I want to see Gonzaga in the Mountain West. My opinion, they've eaten marshmallows all season.
Eating marshmallows?
Since January 1st when the conference came, and I think when you eat all marshmallows, Ohio State I didn't think was overly good. Sometimes you get cavities, and I'm going to predict they have a cavity tonight and that Florida State wins.
Zach Norvell, if he keeps shooting like this, he's on a hot streak from three-point range, unlike many have had. Isn't it like around 50% for like the last, like ever since the conference tournament, maybe the last couple of games of the regular season? He's like shooting 50% from deep. If you have Zach Norvell shooting 50% when he's not really your top scorer, I mean, he's in that group of top scorers, they're balanced. But he killed Ohio State too here in Boise. So Gonzaga, if he keeps that hot streak up, Final Four run in their future.
So looks like you guys agree in the South, games to watch on the West. Once again, all those games will be on Sports Radio Ticket, 1350 AM at 5, and then joined in progress on 93.1 after Caves and Prater tonight.
Now tomorrow, when we look at the games we're going to be picking tomorrow, the brackets look pretty darn clean in that one. Jeff Caves coming in studio, so is Lexus Williams. Jeff is going to put Lexus to work, as he is a guy that we expect to see in the GMs. He's going to match up some of these teams. Jeff, you've improved your basketball IQ for your show. I don't know what multiplying like 1.5 is to 100%, but you've improved tremendously.
Yeah, I'd say so. Lexus thinks he's coming in here to talk basketball, though. That's not accurate. We're going to talk accounting.
Okay.
We're going to talk all things academics. This guy's already got his undergraduate degree. He's working on his master's. So actually, we'll get into some of the basketball issues with Lexus. So we're glad to have him and get to know him a little better, how his ride has been here, how he wants to continue playing. And then, who better? I mean, you talked to assistant coach about Loyola and Nevada, and we'll do the same here.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to what Lexus has to say today. Chris, we'll see if we hit him or didn't hit him tonight. We'll stab it again tomorrow as well. Sweet 16 left. After tonight, four more will be set packing. We'll be back to talk about the whys and the wheres and the whos tomorrow. Caves and Prater joined by Lexus Williams coming up next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.